Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. I'm Jody, your best friend and inner voice, as together we cringe watch all the shows we love and love to hate. For all premium content and bonus episodes, become a member at patreon.com/realitytvpod. You can also find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at realitytvpod or realitytvpodcast.com for links and so much more. And now, on with the show. Hello, welcome back. I hope you guys had a really nice weekend. I know I did. My kids had off school on Friday for a teacher institute day and no Love After Lockup to recap this weekend, so I got lots of extra time with them. Went to my little guy's soccer game on Saturday. He scored a goal. I got that mom lump in my throat. You feel like you're going to cry even though it's not something huge. I don't know if that ever goes away. I mean, those of you with older kids, do you still get that? Because I think I always will. I mean, even seeing other kids singing in a play or something, even if they're not my kids, I still get that, like, oh my gosh, that's someone's loved child up there. I just lose it. I won't, however, be that mom in that book, Love You Forever. And it's on the tip of my tongue, the forefront of my brain, because I was just talking with a friend about this book this weekend. I know it's a popular favorite, right? But that is some messed up shit. It's mother-son dysfunction at its finest. This woman drives across town with a ladder strapped to the top of her car to climb into her adult son's window at night to watch him sleeping. Those of you who are not familiar with this book are probably like, what the hell is she talking about? Of course that's crazy. But some of you love this book and read it to your kids. It's scary. At the end of the book, this grown man is holding his elderly mother like a child, wrapped up in a papoose, rocking her to sleep. It is scary. I mean, you can call me cynical, call me negative, but I dare you not to think of Before the 90 Days, Paul and his hairball mom the next time you read it. Now, this story has always been creepy to me, and I have to share a really quick embarrassing story before we get into Sister Wives, because I gotta tell this. And this goes along with this weird stuff that happens to me, kind of going along with that angel whisper that I talked about in a Patreon episode. Just weird stuff, weird timing happens with me. And years ago, I was getting my hair done and I was talking with the other women that are sitting around, you know, like you do. Now, my stylist at the time, she had her own little studio at the time, so I was just raking this book over the coals. And it was near closing time and my stylist girlfriend came up to meet her before closing. Okay, cool. So fast forward to the next time I'm getting my hair done a couple months later, and I'm telling Katie, that's who does my hair, how pretty her girlfriend is. They were so cute together, blah, blah, blah. And she starts dying laughing. Okay, get this. She goes, you know how you were talking about that book, that kid's book, and you had just gotten done laughing about this book when my girlfriend came up? Turns out her girlfriend's mom had died like a couple years earlier, and she used to read that book to her girlfriend, who is now her wife, and the book meant so much to them that her girlfriend had the quote, whatever it is, I love you forever, blah, 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 codependent will be, I don't know, whatever. She had it tattooed on her side. Now, I must have turned the shade of McKelty's red hair because I was so embarrassed. I felt so badly and I was freaking out like, holy shit, was I talking about this while she was in there? And she reassured me that I hadn't, like I had finished just before she had walked in, but she couldn't tell me because her girlfriend was standing there at the time. But come on, what are the chances? I'm talking about this children's book and someone walks in with a freaking tattoo of it. Ugh. Okay, anyway, she's awesome. We still laugh about it. But I mean, really, how big of an asshole am I, right? Or at least I'm an asshole with bad timing, I guess. Now, all right, let's talk about some sister wives. I was wishing and hoping and praying for anything that was not as boring as last week's polygamy march. And my prayers were answered, kind of. It wasn't as boring, but it was still pretty damn boring, right? And then we had to throw in some kids' medical issues. So I had frustration and I was crying. Now, I'm going to start with a little Janelle. And by Janelle, I mean Maddie and Kayla, but because somehow these two have become the breakout stars of the show. Ugh. Now, because no episode of Sister Wives can be aired if there's not an elaborate themed party in someone's family room, it's Maddie's baby shower. Now, can you even imagine how annoyed the Browns' family and friends are at this point with all of these damn parties? I mean, between arranging sitters, buying gifts, then you go to these parties and you're not even being appropriately fed because all they serve are veggie sticks with some ranch in a cup. We had Maddie's bridal shower, Maddie's wedding, McKelty's shower, McKelty's wedding, Maddie's baby shower, and now Aspen's getting married. Ugh. At least Aspen deserves a party at this point because she's been the one planning all of these things. And you know Maddie and McKelty are not going to reciprocate. So you know Aspen's just going to get stuck with all the leftover decorations from the Mexican hot chocolate bar. Or maybe Vanessa Aldridge, her soon-to-be sister-in-law, will throw something for her. Fingers crossed. Now, Aspen has organized a cute little theme for Maddie. It's a hunting, outdoorsy theme. And it's a Jack and Jill party, meaning that men can go too. Number one, because Maddie doesn't do a damn thing without Caleb. And number two, both Cody and Caleb love camera time. There's also a professional cake that says little man on it. I don't know why it kills me that they have a professional bakery cake. It's a baby shower. You live at home with your parents, Maddie, and you're unemployed. Like, can we stop pretending? What, she can't go and buy some Duncan Hines cake mix and help pitch in? I can't with her anymore. Now, we also learn that Caleb is just as annoyed with people as I am because, did you know, people keep telling Maddie she's going to have a big baby. Like, who does that? Caleb seems like he could be a really good mean girl. And I don't buy this shy guy stuff for a second because I think he can be a real asshole to people that he doesn't know. Now, fast forward to the guests arriving and color me shocked because Cousin Rosie from the Real Housewives of New Jersey shows up and hands Caleb a gift. I was like, Ro? What are you doing here? Did Kathy Wakili curl your hair and get y'all gussied up in a black faded tee for this party?
This is yours. This is for you. It's for him, but it's really for you.
Holy shit. That's not Rosie. It's Tony. What the hell happened to Tony, you guys? He is like a human transformer with very limited abilities. His hair is all kinds of curled and it's angled like kid in play. I'm not sure which one is which, but you know what I mean. His moobs were noticeably larger and triangular in form. I mean, those street tacos went straight to his bosom. But let's get back to the party. Cody has to grandstand and tell everyone that he will only answer to Grandpa while he's holding his own daughter, Ariola, who will be his grandson's aunt at only a few months older. Ugh, strange. Now, I actually wonder how little Axel and Ariola will get along because something tells me that Axel may have the ability to dethrone King Solomon. Game time! Cody and Caleb end up going head-to-head in this game, and I'm not quite sure why because wouldn't that be more of like a mom-dad thing? But okay. They blindfold Caleb and Cody and they have to change a diaper. It's pretty lame. Caleb sucks. Cody is slightly better. But it wasn't until this game that it finally clicked that Caleb and Cody are really the same person. They both love attention, but they both play like they don't. Like, oh, we're just the good Christian men who love their wives and ooh, a camera crew loves to catch how goofy I am. Ooh, such pranksters. Ugh, yuck. Not buying it. Now, we also get to see Madison's pit stains, which sucks. And Cousin Rosie, Tony, is seen looking straight into the cameras and smiling. Tony sure misses those couch interviews, doesn't he? I'm just praying, let's all hold hands around the world, sing a hymn or something. Let's just send a message to the universe that Tony doesn't create a little Tony Jr. or Tekelty in order to get a spinoff. Like, I think our collective brains would just explode. Now, next up, Madison and Caleb take time off from their no jobs to get an ultrasound. Maddie tells us that she's going to have a baby at home and she's going to go all natural. You do you, boo. One of my deliveries, I didn't get an epidural in time and nope, not a fan of it. I much prefer a paralyzation and a pain-free delivery, but you know what? To each their own. Now, the ultrasound tech says the baby has a lot of hair, and Caleb says that's good because no one in his family has hair. Shocking, right? And Maddie thinks the baby looks like Caleb. I think the baby looked like Maddie, but just with a bunch of like tissue and blurry stuff on it. So I guess he looks like Caleb. The thing is, I think Maddie and Caleb actually look alike in a brother-sister kind of way. So I needed to see what this kid ended up looking like. So I did a little Encyclopedia Brown work, looked up Maddie's most recent Instagram photos, and interesting, the kid doesn't have any hair, but he looks like both of them, I guess. I don't know. So much for the ultrasound session that they probably dropped $1.50 for. Now, Caleb also says that baby Axel obviously has a temper because when you poke at him, he gets upset. Once again, this guy is 31 years old. That sounds like something that dumbass kid Shaden on TLC's Unexpected would say. Not a grown man. Now, let's move on to Christine. Ugh, this whole episode, this whole segment of Christine was so sad. Christine and Cody's daughter Isabel has a pretty aggressive case of scoliosis, which is a curvature of the spine. I remember that scoliosis check at school, and that was horrifying and humiliating. Now, I went to a Catholic school, and they just had a few moms that volunteered to come in to help. It had to have been, I don't know what, fifth or sixth grade. So we had to unbutton our shirts and bend over. And I remember being so self-conscious even then that my stomach was going to form rolls when I bent over. And then they thought that they saw a little bit of a curve, so I had to go get rechecked by my doctor. And you guys, I still haven't even told my mom to this day, but I think I inadvertently gave myself a curvature when I bent over because I was trying to like suck in and turn a little bit to the side so my rolls would kind of roll to the other side. I don't know. But still, I'm afraid to tell my mom because I think she'd probably have me repay her the copay, like even now, because I was just so stupid. But seriously though, like whose great idea is it to have 3 to 4 middle school girls in a line at the same time getting checked? Like they should have just given us a pamphlet for eating disorders on the way out because clearly I'm still traumatized about it 25 years later. Whose great idea was it to even plan that? It was probably that damn school secretary, Mrs. Conrad. She made everyone miserable because she was a miserable old bad word. I mean, she also was our school nurse. So if you were sick, she would just get joy out of not letting kids go home. Or she'd tell you to hit the rocks, which meant you just had to go sit over by the statue, St. James. And he was surrounded by these really groovy white planter rocks, you know, the 1970s style. Ugh, kids these days, they're never going to understand the torture of wanting to go home sick. You'd hold that thermometer under your tongue for, was it 2 minutes, 3 minutes? And you'd just be hoping and praying that that mercury would hold the freedom for you to go home so you could watch some U32 on the boob tube. Oh, man. Okay, shit, where was I? Wait, hold on, I gotta go back. Isabel, scoliosis. So Christine calls the adults over to her house and she's going to show them Isabel's results. So Isabel was originally diagnosed with a 26-degree curvature. I mean, that's pretty severe, right? 26 degrees. But unfortunately, it's gotten worse. So now it's up to 38 degrees, and that is still with the use of this day and night brace. Now, Janelle tries to break it down for us simpletons, right? It's curved. It really is curved, like science fiction. Oh, okay. Thanks for that, Janelle. And Robin just decides to make it about herself and how caring she is as she sits with a horrified face, her hands covering her mouth and her nose. Like, can't you just look like you're optimistic for Christine's sake instead of looking like Cody just told you that you weren't, in fact, his favorite wife? Now, we get a little break from the parents, and we're able to hear from Isabel. I'm sure, like many of you, it had me crying, okay? It was as if I was listening to my own kid telling her story. She was humiliated having to wear this brace all the time. She feels self-conscious. She knows it could be worse and that she's lucky, but I don't know. I mean, it was just so sad. She's clearly depressed about it. I just want to reach in there and hug her and beat up any of the little bitches that made fun of her or make my son ask her to the dance. I don't know. But anyway, what are Cody and Christine going to do? Well, if it gets to a 50% or 50 degree curvature, they're going to have to operate and put a metal rod in Isabel's back. Ouch. But before they go that route, they want to try this alternative therapy developed by a chiropractor. He uses exercises to develop muscle strength and muscle memory. And the theory is that this core strength will help strengthen the spine. Now, before they head to Michigan to do this therapy, they're going to get one more x-ray from the doctor. Sadly, the x-ray comes back and the doctor says that the curvature has actually gotten worse. Now, their doctor seemed a little skeptical of this chiropractic exercise thing, but he says that the strengthening of the core, it's not going to hurt. So off to Michigan they go for a two-week boot camp at this chiropractic's office. Now, I looked it up. It is $600 to $700 a day for this boot camp, and it looks like it's a 10-day boot camp. Wow. Like, I mean, we knew that our insurance and our healthcare system was messed up here, but holy shit. Now, the doctor there does some little exercises, lots of, what is that, exercise ball, whatever that's called. And they also put this kind of a brace on Isabel. It's kind of like an athletic ace wrap thing around her whole body. She loves it because it's way better than that horrible, massive brace she had to wear. And she also meets this other cute little tween girl, and they hit it off. I was happy she found a friend, right? Now they go bowling and blah, blah, blah. It's great. Christine and Cody are happy that she found someone that she can relate to. So while Isabel is at boot camp the following day, Cody and Christine get to have some alone time. So they head off to the Flint Farmers Market. Ooh, sounds really romantic, right? Yeah, well, I don't know. I probably shouldn't diss it too hard because it beats the rock pile challenge with a therapist that they had to do a few years ago, and Cody basically told Christine that she sucks. Now, although Cody and Christine are in a really good place right now, it wasn't always that way, especially after Cody married Robin. Ooh, shocking, right? Yeah, none of us expected that at all. Well, turns out Christine became bitter about plural marriage altogether. It seemed as though all their problems came from being polygamist. They had moved from Utah. They added this other wife. And Cody was kind of baffled by this because he was thinking, well, if it weren't for polygamy, we wouldn't be married at all. However, during all this transition time, Cody realizes that he's just got to validate Christine's feelings. And Christine has learned to build a relationship with Robin instead of seeing her as the enemy. And as a result, she and Robin are actually in a really good place. They're good friends. And the only thing I think Christine left out was that she may be on some sort of meds. And I'm not dissing that at all. Like, I have a little prescription helper for my anxiety. I don't think there's any shame in it. I just think if Christine is on something, why not use this opportunity? And if Christine isn't on anything, maybe it was just getting Mary off of her back, right? Maybe LuLaRoe saved Mary and also saved Christine in a roundabout way. Now, side note on these two lovebirds. Did you notice that there was lots of use of the word love? Here's a flower, love. How does the lamp work, love? Thanks, love. Either this is new or we just never really get to see the couples be able to be affectionate with one another because Cody's not like the Brinies or the Aldridges with all the PDA. Now that said, I actually like it for Christine. I enjoy a happy and loving and loved Christine. On the flip side, it's time for a trip to the abandoned wet bar. We're at Mary's house and it's St. Patrick's Day. Again, wow, thanks for the very timely episodes, TLC. Mariah and Audrey are there to help cook dinner. Quite an authentic Irish feast Mary is cooking up. She really went all out to host this dinner. Noodles and jarred Alfredo sauce. Can I have a can of condensed cream of mushroom soup on the side to wash down the artificial preservatives? Yummy. Now Mariah asks who's coming to dinner, and Mary looks at her and says, whoever's home. Because you know Mary doesn't know who's home because she doesn't ever check in with anyone. She only invites people over or interacts when the cameras are around so she can show how accepting she is of Mariah and her girlfriend. I don't trust Mary at all. I think this is all part of the end game she's playing. I think Mary is thinking, if she is nice and supportive of Mariah when she herself steps out to do her own thing and ditches the family, she'll be able to look at Mariah and say, I accepted you and what you wanted to do. Why can't you accept me? Now, it was cute to see how Mariah was excited to see her siblings, though. You know, the ones that Mary doesn't acknowledge as her type of son or daughter. Now, most of the older kids give Audrey a hug. And then Audrey goes to give a certain someone a hug. And that person does a Kenya Moore twirl, Gone with the Wind twirl right past away from her. And that person's name rhymes with Rabbi Shmuley. Now later, Mary struggles to explain how people are supposed to serve themselves because, quite frankly, she's just dumped the pasta into a pot and put the pot on the island. I can think of three ways right off the top of my head that you could serve up that mess of a meal, but whatever. All I really cared about was how Aurora hogged all the black olives. I saw that. Now, it's at this point we learn that Cody is hardcore into Caleb's prayers. Like, he is really into them. Big fan, huge. So he has Caleb say grace. And then Mary takes out her St. Patrick's Day cake with a rainbow on it. Okay, we get it. Gay pride rainbow. And somehow this turns into a really uncomfortable banter where Christine won't let her joke about the rainbow cake and making Audrey a rainbow pillow die. It was just really bad comedic timing. And then Mary was trying to be funny too. Just someone end it and just eat the damn cake already. No, Oh, wait a second. Who's that over there? Is that Tony in a tank top? Okay, why? Why would that even be necessary to wear a tank top? Can you even imagine what you would do if Tony reached over to grab some crudité and you saw his armpit hair dangling and the odor was released from the vacuum seal between his upper arm and his torso? Ugh. And where is Mary when all this is going down? Like, she didn't have an extra LuLaRoe duster around that she could have lent him to make him more presentable? Ugh, rude. Well, now we're about to head to the counseling session with Cody and Mary, the highlight of the episode, but we need to take a moment to discuss the elephant in the room. No, not Tony. Cody's perm. He got a tight perm, didn't he? Because something is very different. There are definitely more curls, more defined wave. It seems much thinner, but more coarse, much more tangly and crispy. I'm just wondering if maybe he's just not conditioning when he's shampooing in the shower or just a two-in-one. Here's what I propose. A good clarifying shampoo, but something that's gentle, a very deep conditioner, and just let that sit. Like, take a load off in the shower, hide from Mary for a good 20 minutes, and then rinse the conditioner out, gently comb through while it's still wet, and just give it a day of rest from styling. No heat, maybe even a Moroccan oil treatment left on. I mean, ideally, he just cuts all his hair down and he just goes bald gracefully, but I just don't think he's emotionally or spiritually ready for that at this juncture. I mean, Noah didn't build an ark in a day, am I right? Now let's just head to Nancy, shall we? To that, Cody says, I guess we must, because he admits that he doesn't like going to therapy. You know why? Because these jingle nuts don't do therapy right. They only go when there's something wrong. They use it as a band-aid to do a quick fix instead of going and using it as an ongoing tool. Now, Mary is still contemplating the purchase of this godforsaken Parowan bed and breakfast house. Cody is dead set against it, but Mary wants him to at least go and look at it with her. But this is just the surface of it all, right? I'm actually surprised at how honest and candid both Mary and Cody were about the relationship for once. Mary says they're struggling to even be friends at this point, and Cody is busy with his wives and his other kids, so it's easy for them to not work on the relationship. Nice, subtle slam there, Mary. Way to throw it all on Cody. She also says that it was actually a big deal that they even drove together in the same car to this therapist appointment. Yikes. I'm going to take it that Cody doesn't even stay at her house then, right? Because she added to that, they're usually not in each other's space. Yeah, I think that's an affirmative, Sarge. Now, once they're in Nancy's office, Cody takes his shoes off and plops down on the couch. That's grounds for divorce right there. Who the hell does that? I mean, imagine you and your partner walk into an appointment, okay, and they just kick their shoes off. That would be the first item of business I would need to address with a therapist present. And while we're at it, what the hell kind of shoes was Mary wearing? They distracted me more than Cody's hair ever has. They were like Converse high tops, but the toes were open and they were like a flesh tone suede or pleather or canvas. I don't know. And it was open under the laces. I can't describe them other than them being like the last shoe on a clearance rack at a TJ Maxx or a Ross, and they just sit there for years and years, and then they're finally marked down to, oh, $3 to $5, and then a hoarder finds them, and they bring them home, and the shoes end up resting under a pile of cat shit and bottled urine. You know what I'm saying. Now, all right, so Nance asks them how their dinner went, and they were assigned to go on this dinner, and Mary says it was fine, but they're still not seeing eye to eye on this house that she's looking at. Now, Cody needs Nancy to help him, quote, use nice words to explain to Mary that this property could overextend them and it's a mistake. I think that's nice enough. Maybe I'm just a bitch. I don't know. Now, Mary quickly breezes over how the house is supposed to be run as a B&B, which is how she originally pitched it to the family. But now her mom wants to live there and she doesn't have time to run a B&B anyway. So I just want to buy this house because I want it and my mom can live there. Ugh, I cannot stand Mary. And you know I'm not a big Cody fan either, but I got to give it to him here. He calmly explained that the house is overpriced by at least double. And then he added this little gem. Some of my wives will join me in the big picture. Some won't. Gee, I wonder who Cody is referring to. He really is a puzzler, isn't he? Now, he also says that if Mary wants to do this, then she's on her own to pay for it. Don't ask the rest of the family to finance it. Now, Mary's response to that really got to me. Very manipulative. Well, it's an invitation to do life on my own. Yeah, Mary, if you're going to buy a house out of state, I'd say that you were the one who wrote up the invitation to yourself. She's just planting the seed that if she buys it, which we know that she does, if Cody lets her buy it on her own, then it's Cody's fault she leaves. It's so twisted, so convoluted. She is such a master manipulator. Oh, but we're not even done with Nancy yet. More skeletons are being uncovered in this closet. Both Cody and Mary admit that they are just platonic. Their lives don't intersect. And when Mary cheated on Cody, and yeah, I'm saying cheated, I'm not saying catfish because she was one who sought it out. Cody says that he was done with her. He wasn't going to fight for the relationship. He was all good with her leaving. Now, he didn't make it seem that way on camera at that time. And for that, Mary should be grateful because Cody and all the other wives backed her up to make it look like she wasn't the loser cheater that she really is. But Mary just keeps playing her tiny little violin on how rough she has it. She just wants to sit down with Cody so she can ask him questions. You want to guess what the questions will be? I'm going to say, can I buy the Parowan house? She just wants Cody to ask her why the house is important. Right. Fuck, Mary. We all know why. Your great-great-grandfather built the house in the 1800s. You've always wanted it. We all know. You've said it all season. Stop the lies. Now, Cody reiterates that it's not just that this house is overpriced, but, that little fact that, we're also felons in Utah and the state can confiscate the property that they own, so now to this, Mary's all, yeah, but I still think that you should go see it at least. So Cody finally caves. He agrees to go, and even Nancy says to Mary, what more do you need to hear? That's pretty strong. Oh, well, Mary, in fact, does need to hear more. She wants Cody to say that he is giving her his full emotional support, that she's not doing this alone. What? How can he do that if he fundamentally disagrees with it, Mary? She is so damn selfish. She is a total April Briney in LuLaRoe leggings. Well, now Cody is freaking out because he realizes that he has to spend a weekend with Mary in a car and likely overnight. Now, Mary is ready to get intimate with Cody again, but Cody, he doesn't want to be affectionate with Mary at all, ever. Now, he knows that it's going to hurt her feelings if he rejects her and that he doesn't reciprocate. So he needs Nancy to kind of make the rules, set the groundwork. So I don't think there's any doubt in anyone's minds that these two are just going to grow apart and go their own way, right? Like when the show ends, Mary's just going to find her way to Utah as a single woman, no ties, and she'll just quietly go off on her own. It'll be gradual, but it will happen. And I think it's clear Cody is just tired of her anyway, and he's not going to care. Okay, let's move forward and see what happened on the finale of Seeking Sister Wife right after the jump. Well, here we are after a short season of this show, the season finale, and to me, it was kind of an anticlimactic ending. It was just kind of abrupt or something. I'll be honest, I don't know if I can honestly say I want more from any of these families, only because I think it would be a season more of the same and we would never truly get the ending that we want. But let's start with the Aldridges. Jeff, Vanessa, and Charisse are at Oregano Restaurant in Provo, Utah. It gets better reviews on TripAdvisor than Yelp, but it's still a decent place. I'll allow it. Now, they're all seated and anxiously awaiting Melina's arrival. Now, remember, Charisse went on a date earlier with Melina, and she's hoping that Vanessa and Jeff will agree to marry Melina because Melina is Charisse's very, very special friend. Well, here she comes, walking down the sidewalk like she's on Blind Date, hosted by Roger Lodge. You know him, Vicki Gunvalson's boyfriend's brother, 6 degrees of housewives, it's a thing. It's Melina. Melina talks sideways out of her mouth because I think she's trying to talk in a Michelle Stay Sweet Duggar kind of voice. I'm very nervous to see them in person. Yeah, I don't believe this chick for a second. Charisse is inside damn near climaxing in her chair while Vanessa is staring straight into Melina's dark soul. Jeff is still being cordial, and I think he was just playing nice because he knows that there's still a slight chance that he'll be sleeping with this woman until eternity. Melina starts by saying she knows she owes them an explanation.
I just couldn't get on that plane. You see, I had a connection with Cherise.
Now, I thought I was going to lose my goddamn mind when she said this because I thought they were going to come clean about having a more than biblical relationship online. But then Melina took a breath and continued.
I didn't have that with you. And you, it made me more scared than excited. Vanessa, you didn't want to get to know me.
Well, finally, sweet little pioneer woman has had enough.
What? I tried telling you I have a hard time connecting. You kept saying it was fine. It's cool. I'll be right back.
Melina bolts from the table to go, I don't know, somewhere. She's probably kicking the shit out of the bathroom stall or something. I don't know. It was strange. But while she's gone, Vanessa is basically calling bullshit on Melina. She's saying that it's shady that Melina's excuse for not coming was that it was Vanessa being slow to warm up, but now that's the reason that she's also coming. It's just not adding up for them. However, Cherise is staying silent because her heart is just breaking as quickly as Melina's fake cover story. So when Melina comes back, Vanessa ultimately finds her inner Christian moment, smooths things over, and says that she'd like to build a friendship with Melina. And Jeff says that he'd like to get to know her more, and maybe she can come over and meet the kids, spend some time at the house.
Well, I should go get back to the hotel and clean things up.
Yeah, I'm going to take that as a hard pass there, Jefe. Melina looks straight at Cherise and says,
I'll be talking to you very soon.
And Cherise responds with a huge smile and says, talk to you soon, hopefully. Yeah. Adios, Melina. In reality, she didn't feel like she could bone Jeff, so she just flew back to wherever she came from. Now, later on, Jeff is building a romantic fire pit for three. Ugh. I mean, it's got to be awkward to never know who the third wheel is, especially when these husbands share these lovey-dovey PDA moments with both wives at the same time. Ugh. Now, Vanessa comes out in a very typical pioneer woman out on the farm, warm and cozy coat. And Cherise, whoa, was like a Disney's Frozen, Anna goes on a Navajo adventure in Epcot. I would give anything to see Cherise out in the wild on a family vacation to, oh, the Grand Canyon or even the local zoo. She's the type of woman, type of mom, who's got the khaki pocketed vest, the safari hat with the bug spray or SPF tucked into the side, and a nice just below the knee sensible short, likely a pair of tan-colored socks paired with maybe a Reebok or a Dr. Scholl sneaker for arch support, naturally. You guys know what I'm talking about, right? Just whenever I see these people out and about, I just think to myself, like, did I miss the memo that we are out on the Lost Island? Like, your Honda is in the parking lot and there's a Starbucks right behind you. Relax. There's only one Steve Irwin, and Bindi holds the key to that legacy. So calm down, Crocodile Dundee. Okay, so blah, blah, blah. Vanessa will open up more. Jeff cuddles both of them at the same time, which I didn't enjoy. And in the end, we learn that they never spoke to Melina again. However, turns out they may need to add another Mrs. Mug to the collection because they're currently courting a new sister wife in their new state of South Dakota. Ooh, romantic. Well, the Aldridges aren't the only ones who needed to move. So do the Brineys. Last week, we left off knowing April didn't want to move after Drew was insisting that they need to leave Utah. Drew surprisingly seems pretty damn pissed off during his interviews this week. He really didn't hold back, and I was loving it. He said that when they signed up for the show, they all sat down, they all agreed that it would likely mean that they would have to leave Utah. They all agreed, they signed it together, and in Drew's words, for April to act like she didn't know that, it's insane. Yep. Ding, ding, ding. April is outside planting flowers, which is pretty strange if you're packing up to leave, right? Like, that detail has still just been gnawing away at me all night. And, well, she starts this explanation why she thinks it's a bad idea for her to move with the family. It's about the kids. Okay, roll the tape of Drew.
Although I have compassion for the issues April mentioned, I know that was bull. I was disgusted for the lack of empathy she had for everyone.
Drew, isn't that the trait of a sociopath, or at the very least, a narcissist? Now, meanwhile at the park, Arlie is talking with Angela and little baby Donatello Vincenzo Giudice, and they're just talking as if they are so worried about April not going with them. What will they do? She has to go with them. Plural marriage is eternity, so she can't give up. What? Ladies, this is your chance. What are you doing? Just zippy-lippy and let her stay in Utah. You can have Drew and his mandals and his Ken Kratz soft voice all you want. Every other night, 2 weekends a month. Arlie, you love date night. Date night every other weekend. Come on. But no, these two want April to stay. I don't get it. So back to April and Drew. April has come up with a brilliant idea. Drew rotate weeks instead of nights with his wives. She'll stay here in Utah while Drew pays support for her and the kids in separate houses and a separate date, and he can commute to see her every third week. Easy peasy. It's for the kids, Drew. Now again, Drew doesn't hold back, and he says,
I was shocked at her behavior, so self-absorbed. It shows she's not committed to the family. We tried for years getting the family together. That last minute, she pulls this.
Now this time, Drew gets up to walk away from her, and he says, April, that's BS and you know it. No, done. Won't do it. Now, I'd say the same thing to Drew that I said to 2 and 3. If April wants to leave, let her leave. Now, what's this? Commercial break. That TLC chick that comes on to do her little life hack lesson, I can't take it anymore. She came on and Mr. Real TV and I started cackling like a bunch of ladies watching Mary's live LuLaRoe sales, because this chick gives a great hack for kids who are picky eaters. Make a taco station. Start with shredded chicken and avocados, tomatoes, lettuce, cheeses. Hey, asshole, thanks for the tip. Pass that on to the person who had this idea back in 1977. And also, my kids are so damn picky, they won't even eat that. So what do you got for me now? What's that? You do have something else? Weight loss tip. Okay, I'm listening. I could stand to lose a few. What do you got? Weight loss is easy. You simply eat what you want as long as it's healthy. I shit you not, that is what she said. Eat what you want as long as it's healthy. I mean, oh my God, you guys, why didn't we think of this? It's that easy. How did TLC get the rights to the scientific breakthrough? Whatever that lady is doing on our TV, put her out of her misery, our misery. Stop with these interstitials, TLC, please. All right, now back from Weight Loss 101. We're 2 weeks later and the family looks pretty close to packed up. Drew has quit his job. He's leaving law. And they're moving to Oregon where they're going to start off on a new path. Arlie cannot wait for her kids to call Drew dad, and she doesn't have to live in hiding anymore. It's a dream come true. Good for them, I say. Now, Angela is also determined to protect the family that they've built together. She's on board as well. And April? Well, she's just hanging out on the countertop like girls in middle school. She hasn't started packing yet because she's still holding out hope that she doesn't have to leave. She thinks the idea of sharing Drew every few nights just doesn't sound that appealing. Well, that would have been helpful to share 16 years and 12 kids ago. But okay. Now, Arlie finally goes in on April. Really not that harshly, I don't think. It was more like, listen, we made a commitment to build this family together, raise the kids together, and now you're just backing out. It would be devastating to the family, especially the kids, if you stay in Utah. And then, the manipulative twist we were fools to think we wouldn't get.
Don't just attack me because I had an idea to do something different. I'm not convinced my sister wives want me to go. Why would I want to go to Oregon to live with two women who really don't want me around? Maybe you would be happier without me.
You guys, even Drew rolled his eyes. And then out of nowhere, Arlie suddenly starts apologizing and kissing April's ass. I mean, we see this crazy dynamic play out right before our eyes. I would love if a social worker, psychologist, someone smarter than I out there, please tell us your thoughts on this. You can see Angela and Drew shocked at this whole sequence of events going on before them too. But finally, Angela makes her way around the kitchen island, and she's kind of forced to say something at this point. She actually does a nice job of putting it back on April and not apologizing, and she says, I'm happy you've arrived at this place, April. And then April grabs Angela's head and brings her in for a very long, very tight embrace around her skull. And Drew is looking on, smiling like, all is well. No, this is crazy. Once again, psychs, social workers, MDs, nurses, weigh in on this one. What is going on here on a clinical level? And equally important, why do they have a dozen wine glasses if they don't drink? Andrea from Love After Lockup had them too. I don't understand, especially when you're packing and moving. Wine glasses are a pain in the ass to pack, so why even have them at all? So let's check in. Where are the Brinies today? Drew is writing a book in Oregon, side eye, and the wives, turns out, are still working on their differences. Ooh, what a twist. Now, lastly, we meet up one last time with the shady, shady Snowdens. Much like John on Married at First Sight, these two are always on, always have an agenda. They want to be portrayed as the smart, sexy, eclectic couple. So Dimitri is going to come in, flirt with Ashley, oh, talk about the dishes. Yeah, ask a real wife how she'd respond when she's 11 months pregnant and she needs help with the dishes. It's just so rehearsed. Ugh. Now, despite being very pregnant at this point, Ashley is still wanting to find a sister wife before the baby's born. Sounds like solid logic. What could go wrong there? Now, because of this timeline, they're thinking of asking Ashley's internet friend, Jakira, to visit them. But uh-oh, that's right. Jakira has 5 kids. That's going to be tough for her to get away. So perhaps we fly to North Carolina to meet her. Ooh, good idea. Let me bring some Chuck's packs and bullets for me to bite on in case I go into labor on the plane. For real, isn't Ashley way too pregnant to fly at this point? I guess she doesn't care. She'll just have Jakira help her out when they land anyway. I don't know. But there's this whole great, totally natural, not at all planned moment here where Ashley says she's going to go upstairs to do her hair. And Dimitri says, okay, I'll go get my laptop and meet you in the living room. Yeah, normally we don't arrange for a meeting place when one of us leaves the room in my house. Maybe we're more of a spontaneous, we'll figure it out by context and visual clues kind of couple. You know, we like to keep it spicy. Now, once at their meetup spot, they ring Jakira up and ask her what she's doing. Nothing, says a single mother of 5, Jakira. What? Maybe Jakira really is needed around the Snowden home because girl knows how to get shit done if she has nothing to do but dick around online with polygamists. Ashley asks if Jakiro would be up for meeting them, and she doesn't really get an answer from her. So Dimitri clarifies with, I think she just asked you out on a date, not a marriage proposal. And then Jakiro finally agrees. It was so awkward to watch. So I'm not sure what kind of great vibe Ashley is feeling from her, unless it's usually something else they talk about, if you know what I'm saying. And what I'm saying is confirmed when Ashley says it could be adventurous and risque. Not risky, risque. So she's into risque. Okay then, message received. Now fast forward and they land in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Dimitri's nervous because he hasn't been the one talking with Jakiro, and Ashley's nervous because if this all falls apart and they don't really connect, it's on her and it's going to affect their friendship. These two are so fucking weird. Dimitri's attracted to the bond that Ashley has with Jakiro. I'm sure he is. And then he's asking Ashley to help him with his cologne. It's just so bizarre, such an icky vibe. So now, where are they headed? Ooh, to a wine and paint place, because Jakiro likes to create things. Okay, so does my 8-year-old who went to a birthday party at one of these places last weekend. And had I known it was a meetup place for polyamorous or polygamous couples, I would have stuck around. Dimitri gets started, pours himself some red wine, and of course Ashley's got to have a glass of water, and here comes Jakiro in white jeans. Jakiro, Jakiro. Not only do I want to start singing Shakira, Shakira, hips don't lie when I hear your name, but I also want to tell you to go home and change. The worst thing you can wear to a painting place is white jeans. Come on. Dimitri, what do you think?
My first thought? She's cute. She's a heavier woman. That's okay.
Ugh, eesh. Now, not only that, but Dimitri hands over a vase of flowers. The worst. I always have to say this, but what is she supposed to do with that damn thing now? And then Jakiro smells the flowers, although I'm pretty certain these flowers aren't like the good smelling kind of flowers, but I'm no Jeremiah Duggar, who's the expert florist, so I stand corrected if need be. Now, I thought this date seemed very awkward. Jakiro was quiet, not so much eye contact. I think she was nervous, self-conscious, but Ashley seemed to be having a grand old time, which really threw me off. Now, I'm not sure how to say this without sounding like a total bitch or a non-feminist, but part of me wonders, does Ashley like Jakiro because Jakiro is maybe, in some people's eyes, not as typically attractive as Ashley, so therefore Ashley doesn't feel as threatened as she would with, say, a younger and more model-esque Jocelyn? Well, they end the date, we assume. We don't exactly see how it all ended, but the Snowdens are back in Atlanta on their porch that they've filled with modern furniture. Like, they love making a statement with furniture, don't they? And they're talking about, what are we going to do about Jakiro? Well, Ashley is all for it. Dimitri, he's not so sure. So they're going to learn from their mistake and slow things down. Date at the same speed with one another this time, but they're hopeful Jakiro may be the one. Well, where are they now? Ashley had a baby girl, and things with Jakiro didn't work out. However, they're still seeking a sister wife. So if you're interested, go and hit up Dimitri on his life coaching or life architecture site. I have a feeling they're not too picky, or at least they won't be able to afford to be so picky anymore. Now, what is your feeling on this show? I don't know how you feel, but I'm kind of good with how they left things. Like I said before, I'm just not that hungry to find out any more about them. I feel like if TLC were to follow up, what are we going to find out? It's likely that it's going to end up like The Browns or like any of the other several polygamy shows. I don't know. For now, I'm good. Now that leads me to next week's Three Wives, One Husband. For now, I have no plans to recap it. I'll probably watch the first episode, just kind of check it out, see if it's any good. But I don't know about you, but I'm just kind of sister-wived out. But there's a chance. Now, also a heads up on recaps coming up. We've got some Counting On, Teen Mom, and Married at First Sight. I know MTV is starting another Teen Mom 2 or something, but I'm not sure that they've released a date for that yet. So keep your eyes peeled and let me know if you see it. Coming up on Patreon, I'm going to be adding some additional show recaps over there. The monthly pledge price will not change, so that $5 still stays the same, just adding more content for you. Thank you to those of you leaving such amazingly sweet and thoughtful reviews. Really, truly, you are all the best. I love this community we have here, and before I start crying about back braces again, I will just say, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Take it easy this week and stay salty.